Hello, this is Ethan Moses with HorribleNight.com, here with Scapegoat creator Ian Stalker. How you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. I absolutely love the game. Excited to be talking to you tonight. So let's get going. Let's ask the questions. I like the hard-hitting questions first, Ian, so I'm going to go with those.
Okay.
So, you know, goats and mice have a horrible reputation in society today. One eats trash while the other lives in it. By featuring them as the heroes of Scapegoat, some may say you're an advocate of sorts for these animals in the betterment of their reputation. Do you agree? Why or why not?
Yeah, I think I am a little bit. I think there should be more animals in games. And goats are pretty fascinating because, you know, they can mean a lot of different things. So on one hand, they are like a source of comedy. And on the other hand, they're associated with the occult. So, you know, even going back to the Bible, which is the origin of the term scapegoat, and, you know, which was actually a mistranslation of a scapegoat. Yeah, I figured it was time to make a game featuring a hero goat and make it a good role model goat.
That's awesome. That is absolutely awesome. What was Mouse in for? I know Goat was accused of witchcraft, but was Mouse also accused of witchcraft, or something else happened to him?
That is something that's just going to have to wait for a future game to be revealed.
Oh, here we go. Good. I like that. Now I'm excited for the future. The accusation of witchcraft is a big deal, especially considering what happened in Salem, Massachusetts. However, witches are dangerous, and too many of their kind could spell disaster for society as we know it. Would you say that the innocent accused are a justifiable casualty in the war on witches, or is the war on witches itself causing more problems than it is helping?
Whoa, okay, yeah, this takes me way back, because this would be like a question... You know, this would be like a major political topic 100 years ago. Or maybe it was 150 years ago. People would actually be asking this question. Yeah, the idea for the game came from I was reading a book on the history of this public domain book called The Lives of the Necromancers. And I just couldn't pass up a title like that. And it talked about the witch hunts and witch trials and that sort of thing that went on maybe 100-200 years ago. And it just kind of fit the term scapegoat and scapegoat that, you know, these crimes, just the accusation would get people in trouble. And there wasn't a whole lot of justice back then. You know, it wasn't until people started accusing people in higher places of witchcraft, people who could pull strings, that like kind of the whole jig was up for accusing people of witchcraft. I know that's kind of a bizarre answer that's not too well organized, but
no, yeah,
that's... this is based on actual accusation of witchcraft.
Well, with the politics out of the way, I'm curious, always curious, what got you into games in the first place?
So yeah, I've been playing games probably like a lot of your audience since like longer than I can remember. And, you know, grew up with computers and with consoles. And probably what started me being interested in making games was a Commodore 64 game back. This thing was released in like 84 or 86 or something like that, called Adventure Construction Set. And this was like an RPG creation tool where you could draw your own little sprite graphics and design monsters and design weapons and armor, and you know, type in text that the villagers would tell you and stuff like that. And I just like was totally hooked on this game, just making all kinds of games. I don't know how many I actually finished, but I just loved the process of I don't know, building worlds. So fast forward like 20 years or so, and I'm working as a contract game developer. So I'm not really making my own games yet, but I'm doing audio for handheld games like Game Boy Advance and Nintendo DS. Did a bunch of titles as a contractor. And towards the end of 2009, two projects I was supposed to start vanished. I had a verbal agreement on them, and kind of like because of the economy and layoffs and stuff like that, I found myself with a lot of free time suddenly. Like I had nothing to do. So I took my laptop to the coffee shop and started a new project in XNA Game Studio and just like kind of worked on it a little bit every day. And Soulcaster was done about 5 months later.
Tell us a little bit about the people that aren't familiar with your games. Talk a little bit about Soulcaster really quickly, because I think that people may connect you to Scapegoat now, but Soulcaster and Soulcaster 2 had come out, you know, I think about a year ago. Is that correct?
Both last year, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
In March and then in December, I think.
Okay.
So they're like 9 months apart. So Soulcaster is the first thing I did as a solo project. I kind of did the whole thing myself. And I'm not excellent at any one particular part of game development, but I'm pretty good at everything, you know, all told. I'm like a red mage from Final Fantasy, like sevens all across the board. So that enabled me to at least do everything on my own. The graphics had to have like a retro look to them because I'm just, you know, not capable of doing anything higher technology than that. But yeah, I wasn't quite sure when I released it if anyone would connect with it, but it was on the top rated list in Xbox Live Indie Games for a while and got some pretty good reviews, and I even got some fan mail about it, which was just like an awesome feeling. So I made a follow-up, Soulcaster 2, which was also pretty well received, and that set me on the path to making my third game, The Scapegoat, which I started right after Soulcaster 2.
Cool. And that kind of takes me to the question, you know, with having a retro look, some people, if they're just looking at the cosmetics of things, they may think it's simple. And I don't think any of your games could be described as simple by any stretch of the imagination. Do you sometimes feel that the retro graphics kind of may cause those issues that people may look over because they think, oh, here's another retro game?
I haven't dealt with that much directly. I get a lot of feedback from people that like the pixelated look and like the sprite art. And I think part of that is that there aren't that many sprite-based games these days. You know, people have moved, even 2D games are much more based on like high-res illustrations. And then, of course, most games are 3D anyway. I did have an experience with that, though. I submitted my game for a games festival in Europe. It was a Scapegoat. And no, actually, this was Soulcaster 2. And they liked the game, but turned it down because they thought that the look of it might not connect with some younger gamers. Mm. And so that totally could be the case. I mean, I have no idea how much of the appeal of that look for me is nostalgia versus like, is it intrinsically cool? I'm not really sure. For now, it's what we're going to have to live with until I get a more capable artist. But I've always been a fan of sprite art and try and do my best with it. So I don't know. I think while some of the game audience may just pass over because you know, they don't like the look of it or it looks like too much of an old game, I think maybe there's 10% of the gaming audience that wants more sprite-based games, and I can cater to them. And if I can make them happy, that's all I need.
Yeah, I really enjoy the indie market on Xbox Live. I think that you know, per price and just some of the unique titles on there, it's just a really cool. There's always something new to go in there and check out. But I also know that there's quite a bit of crap in there. And do you feel like your biggest competition in the Xbox Indie Live or Xbox Indie market is trying to differentiate yourself from the crap, or is it the actual, you know, legitimate titles that are coming out right now?
I actually don't think either one is a big problem for me in the scheme of things. You know, there are games that are like gimmicks or someone's first game, hobbyist, you know, like the derogatory term would be shovelware, but you know, I don't really want to put down anyone's work. You know, this is something that someone, you know, maybe put a lot of effort into, and they're just using the service the same way I am. And that's what it's designed for. You know, that's the main difference from Microsoft's perspective between indie games and live arcade is indie games is low barrier to entry, but then they're not going to promote it the way they promote arcade. So when there are good games on the service, I think that's great because I think it increases traffic and, you know, I always like to see high quality titles there and play high quality titles on the service. I think that's fantastic. And I don't think we're really competing against one another because these games are $1, $3. It's not like, you know, with a $60 game that's going to be someone's monthly budget and they need to decide, you know, this is not Modern Warfare versus Call of Duty, versus Battlefield. So I don't think I feel, you know, threatened by good games on the service. I think what would help the most is if it were organized so that people could find games they were interested in more. I think the layout of the marketplace just doesn't lend itself to discovering new things. And that would be a whole other interview if you wanted to open that can of worms.
I think we opened that can of worms on one of the podcasts we did a couple weeks back. So, and it was quite the can of worms, to say the least. In reference to Battlefield 3 and Modern Warfare 3, which is your pick?
You know, I have not played Modern Warfare 3, and I played Battlefield 3 actually just yesterday. I had my first experience with it because, like, all my friends have been playing, and I've been so busy promoting the game, promoting a scapegoat, that I've, like, barely played any games. And I just have to admit, I got the crap kicked out of me. Like, it's been way too long since I've played an FPS. You'd have to go back to, like, Wolfenstein Enemy Territory. It's the last real team-based FPS I played on the computer. And, man, it just, times have changed. This thing is, like, half MMO. There's, like, a million weapons, and I'm getting all these unlocks. Even though I was, like, 0-10, I'm getting all these awards after the match. I'm like, what are these awards for? So it's going to be a struggle. I don't know if I can really put in the time it takes to become, you know, like a worthwhile competitor at it. But that's the only one I've played so far. So, and I have friends that work at both EA and Activision, so I can't pick sides on the basis of that.
understandable. Yeah, it's funny. I talked to the guys from Min-Max Studios that did Space Pirates and Zombies and asked them this question too. But do you even have time to play video games outside of what you're doing now? Or again, is that kind of, would you rather be using that time to make games, I guess, is the big question.
Making games is kind of exhausting. So I don't actually, like during a crunch time, I'll put in long hours. But day to day, I actually try and conserve energy and not work too many hours out of the day. Try and put in, like, you know, 3 to 5 solid hours of work, and that leaves me enough time to work on other stuff. So I do have time to play games. However, I don't play a wide assortment of games. Like, I don't know, lately I've just put in a lot of time on Dark Souls and kind of, instead of all the other great things, I have to wait on Skyrim. Even though I was a big fan of Oblivion, I just, you know, have to get through Dark Souls first.
Yeah. Now, talking about going back to Scapegoat and going back to Goat and Mouse, and I kind of, you know, in my review, I kind of went on about that tag team. I really liked it. And I saw that, you know, Michelle Jouet of Ska Studios, and I apologize, Michelle, if I'm mispronouncing your last name, did some fan art of Goat and Mouse. And I wonder, does that kind of inspire you to take those characters into that franchise territory where you're doing plush dolls and board games and trading cards? Or are you okay with them just being, you know, video game characters at this point?
You know, like, yeah, that fan art was freaking awesome. And that was, like, a great moment in my career, is getting fan art. And, yeah, like, I don't know. I guess they're pretty likable characters. And I would love to, I'd love to release plushies. My wife said that plushies would be a great idea. And so we looked it up online. And unfortunately, you need, like, a minimum order of 5,000 or something. So, and I don't know, should I start a Kickstarter for Scapegoat and Mouse plushies? I don't know.
If you did, I would put it, that would be a news headline for me on our website. I would definitely support that, because I think those would be badass plushies, but 5,000 is a lot though.
Yeah. Maybe I'm not looking in the right place. So if anyone knows somewhere to get smaller orders, that would be pretty cool. Aside from that, no, they're just going to exist in the game space, at least for the time being.
Okay. Can we be looking forward to Scapegoat 2 perhaps soon?
I wonder about that. So, yeah, there will definitely be a follow-up, and what form it will take kind of depends. I would like to not rewrite a game engine because that takes a long time and people would probably not want to wait another year. So maybe it would take the form of some sort of level pack, like add a few different gadget types and some new graphics and sound, and all new levels, but keep the basic gameplay the same. I mean, the Mega Man series got away with doing that for like 10 games in a row. So that might be an option. Not really sure yet. It would be a few months before something like that would happen, though.
Okay. Okay. Cool. In a kind of broader sense of things, what does success mean to you? I know that you it's cool to see how excited you are to get fan art and to get, you know, letters and stuff like that. To me, that's almost one aspect of success for you. But what else is that? What is it? Is it money? Is it making games, the kind of games you want? Is it fame? I mean, what is success truly to you?
So yeah, to have connected with people to the point where they would like take the time to write me email or draw a picture, or I don't know. When I was at GDC, I ran into someone who just, you know, recognized my name from Soulcaster and was like, "Hey, I played Soulcaster and I liked it." So it was like, "Wow, I met a random person in the wild who played my game and liked it." That's indescribable. So I've got that covered. Like, I don't need that much of that in life, and that's wonderful to get that. Next step is the money, because as you know, and your audience knows, Xbox Live Indie Games, it's not designed to be a business platform. Some people have struck gold with it and have made tons of money, but overall, you know, aside from a handful of mega hits, there's, you know, it's more of a trickle of income and not enough to support a, you know, a growing business. So that means moving to PC and potentially other platforms, and kind of, you know, I've got the creative side handled so far, and now, like, I need to kick in with the entrepreneurial side and figure out how to make some cash with these titles so that it can be a full-time, ongoing thing, because this is what I want to do.
Cool. Would you be looking at Steam probably as your next step in terms of the PC market, or do you have other ideas?
Steam would be fantastic, but I understand they take some convincing, and that might be kind of a long road, but I will definitely be pitching to them. So, yeah, right into Steam, everyone, and tell them you want to see Escape.
Where did the name Magical Time Bean Studios come from?
That is, the answer to that is so boring that it's best left a mystery. But I will say that it was not intended to be a lasting thing. When I made Soulcaster, I just picked a name that was so ridiculous it would be easy for me to like move on when I eventually picked a real company name. But yeah, because Soulcaster was successful, now I'm kind of stuck with it.
Yeah, I got a nickname like that back in high school. I don't know if this was intentional, but we were kind of throwing this around before a podcast last week, and looking at Escapegoat and it being a great game, but you literally released Escapegoat right in the middle of what we call epic release fall. I mean, you had all the threequels coming out. Skyrim was on the horizon. You know, Modern Warfare 3 and Battlefield 3 were having their battle, and here comes Escapegoat. And we kind of thought it was funny to relate you to almost the John McClane of independent gaming, in that you just rushed right in there, and it didn't matter to you. Now, you probably didn't read into it too much, but, you know, as gaming journalists, we tend to read into things a lot more than needed. But did you anticipate that people may want a break from the big, heavy games, or were you just like, I'll just release at this point?
It's definitely more of the latter. Like, yeah, I guess I would like to picture myself as, you know, kind of this heroic dude, you know, guns blazing, taking on Modern Warfare 3 and all the others, you know, bring it on. But I mean, to be honest, I was just so busy finishing the game and I wanted it to be released. I really didn't take into account other game releases. It was just a matter of, like, the game's done now. It's been, you know, it spent about a month being certified, like, through peer review so it could be released. And then there were some download issues with the marketplace that I waited to blow over, and then I'm like, okay, get this thing out there. I can't wait any longer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just so happened then. But since you mention it, a couple of reviews actually mentioned this as like, hey, if you want a break from like the, you know, epic AAA stuff that's all coming out, like, here's this game that's exactly the opposite of all that stuff. So I guess maybe there is, like, you know, if I can get the anti-AAA crowd on my side, or the people who just need a break.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you definitely could. I think that maybe instead of, if you do want to take, get a different name, maybe Indie John McClane, that could be a possibility in the future, though you may have to fight crime in addition to making independent games, so that might be a bit much. So,
well, if Michelle draws me as that persona, then maybe that would give me a start of, you know, how to live my life.
Well, yeah, there's add t-shirts to the plush dolls, or actually action figures at this point, man. I tell you, you just became a franchise in about 15 minutes, so that works out. I always want to know, and again, this is always kind of a generic question, but I mean, what are your biggest influences in terms of gaming?
So going back to like the classic era, probably the biggest ones would be Metroid and Zelda. And what I liked the most about them was that there were these worlds that you could explore, and that returning to them even after you've beaten them, like, you know the world a little better, and you can, you know, do a little better than your last run through. And it's not just a one-time thing. It's like starting a new game is pretty much just as much fun as continuing your last game. So games that do that, I really respect. And I get that with Dark Souls. I got that with Diablo 1. You know, yeah, like, you get to kind of express yourself. You have your own way of beating the games. And I really liked that. That's something that I've always looked for in games. And so, yeah, in terms of where I'd want to go, I would like to make an explorable world type adventure game, which, to be honest, is what Escape Ghost started as. If you look at early prototype videos of it, you'll see that it's not just a one screen, you know, screen by screen puzzle game. There was a map, and you could move off the edge of the screen and go to a new screen to the left or right or up or down. I had plans to have like an inventory system and all kinds of stuff. At some point, though, I realized that this thing was just spinning out of control, and I had to make a decision. Is this an exploration game, or is it a puzzle game? And since there wasn't really any combat, it's hard to do exploration without the combat to tie you over during the wandering around times. So I took it entirely in the puzzle direction. But I'm hoping to use that technology that I developed for adventuring in a future game. I think that would be something really cool.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. So 2011, again, has been the year of threequels, if you will. What do you think 2012 is going to be? And do you think 2012 is going to be a year of innovation? And do you think that is probably the best time to really jump on and get games like Escape Goat exposed even more so than they are now? Because I really feel like everyone's going to be exhausted from 2011. I think people are going to want something new.
I hadn't really thought about that, but that's a good point. I think, yeah, like, all the studios are probably going to be taking a breather, getting their comp time, recuperating, regrouping for the next battle, which probably won't happen next year. Another trend I'm noticing is lots of people are going indie. Like, it's the new innist religion to quit your job at the game company and start making your own games, or form a small team and start making your own games. Because of that, like, yeah, we're going to see, compared to 2011 and 2012, I think, yeah, 2011 has all these great AAA titles. 2012 will probably see a nice cluster of high-quality indie titles. And, yeah, that's where the real innovation happens usually. So I'm excited. We're going to see some good stuff probably.
Do you think that the indie games now have that lasting appeal that, like, the Marios and the Zeldas had? Or do you think that, again, because of all of the titles being released now, that they may get lost?
Well, I think a lot of indie games, there are some blockbuster indie games. There's, you know, the Braid and Limbo type of indie games. But most of us just kind of glide under the radar, and we're making these games. And, yeah, there are, you know, these blockbuster AAA games coming out from time to time, and it's possible that they're affecting us. It's possible that the news stories get buried, but it's also possible that more people are reading gaming news because of them, and then they happen to catch a glimpse of a cool indie game on the side. So I'm not really sure whether it whether any gems will be lost in the quarter four of 2011 madness.
Do you think that indie has a possibility of gaining that reputation that the movie industry indie got, in the sense that indie was more of a term attached to a project that had a style as opposed to an actual independent game?
Yeah, the term indie means so many different things. And going to GDC and IndieCade and E3, like, I can kind of see things from all angles. There are indie games that are just kind of exist to clone other games and make a quick buck. There are not many, thankfully, but they're there. And then on the other end of the spectrums are like these pure art piece games that are totally, you know, not expecting to make any money, but are trying to make a statement or trying to, explore something unexplored in games. And I think most of us are kind of in the middle. We're making the games we want to play and the games we want to see made, and maybe picking up some pieces that were forgotten back when everything moved to 3D and games started having really big budgets. That, yeah, maybe there's some threads that need to be picked up back from the 80s and 90s.
You know, it's obvious that it's tough for a AAA game to make money in the way that a successful indie game can make money, in the sense that you have these huge studios, huge overhead. You know, a game like Modern Warfare 3 or Skyrim that make a ton of money, that's almost the exception, it seems, now with AAA titles because of all that are being released now. Do you almost feel like there's going to be a AAA apocalypse and the indie titles are going to rise to the top and retake the earth, or do you think that AAA titles are secure where they're at right now?
I think it's getting more and more precarious for AAA games, like ultra big budget games, because they've got a couple things that they're up against that's kind of new. One of them is that it's way easier to release a game than it has been ever before, because you can release on PC or XBLIG or whatever. And so you don't need to go through a publisher anymore. And there isn't a huge barrier to entry or huge cost. So that competitive advantage that big companies have, while they still have a huge advantage with marketing or, you know, technology or whatever, just raw resources, they're still going to have to compete against smaller games. And if they're selling their games for $60 and there are other games that are maybe not as epic but are still fun for $1 or $3, that might have them a little worried, because getting people to fork over $60 for a game, I think, is getting harder and harder. That just new pricing models might eventually make it so that the $60 in-store on-disc game is kind of a legacy thing. I'm not really sure about that, but that's a possibility. And yeah, in terms of return on investment, it is, you know, it's devastating when tens of millions are invested in a AAA game and then it flops. And, that really sucks because the company takes a hit, the employees take a hit. And then when they go to make their next game, if they do, they try and do more market research and take less risk and maybe make something more generic in order to hedge their bets a little bit more and try and secure like something in the known, you know, like, we know there's a market for this, so we're going to do it. And then you're not really innovating anymore. And then you're really opening yourself up to, I think, disaster.
Finally, what do you see as the next step for Magical Time Bean Studios, a.k.a. Indie John McClane Studios?
So from here on out, main prime directive is PC ports for all my games, because XNA is cross-platform to PC anyway. It's really a matter of compatibility testing and finding distributors for them. So that's the next thing I'm working on. After that, prototyping for Soulcaster 3, which is a game I can't wait to do. I just wish I, you know, could like freeze time for a month to work on the next designs for it, because I've had some great ideas for the last year. Potentially some sort of follow-up to Escape Goat. And yeah, I mean, new game ideas come to me way too frequently, and I've got just a stack of things that I'd love to explore, but won't have time to in my lifetime. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Cool. Cool. Well, I guess it's better to have a lot of ideas than no ideas at all, but I'm excited. I'm pumped up. I can't wait to see what comes next for you. I want to jump into Soulcaster, actually, because after, you know, playing Escape Goat, I saw it and haven't had time to play it yet, but it looks cool. And it was great talking to you, great interview, and I hope for the best for you in the future.
Hey, thanks so much for your time.
All right.